The first piece that I'm going to do is something brand new, and then I'm going to get into some pieces from the book that's so far only been published in heaven, but I'll do some of those. The first piece is about what can happen when you're overstimulated, and in fact, it's about what happened to me when I was overstimulated. I saw speed limit signs painted in invisible ink. It must have been the ginseng blur. Exhilarating. Still, the quiet image of the silver key and the golden lock, it did appeal to me. But the illusion, it was such a magnet. Down the aisle of dawn oak trees, I saw that constant constable coming for me. But ground in the dust, gravestones and rhinestones, they look about the same. And I was blinded by the glare. Somewhere, thoughts were concise and clear without all these scrambled notions, but I just couldn't connect. My motives were rubbed raw. My motif was punctured. Self-indulgence was a bore. Now, a year later, Johnny B. Goode orbits outer space, and I try to rise above it. As we stroll through the grounds wrapped in a cloak of bewilderment, it was given to us by a promiscuous gnome, and it was given to us for a reason that now we don't know. Okay, some shard pieces that are like last summer I was working with a photographer trying to get the book together, and I started to see all these shard poems as snapshots of like separate realities. People are everywhere. Folks are every place. You look, they look at you, out the rear windows of cars, trains, and even out of planes. Some with a hum, some with some hope in their eyes. Many faces, though, are bent to allow the eyes to slide to the side. And that's where they stay and stare and peer. Isn't it queer that we don't look each other in the eye? This one's for all the joggers and hikers. It's called Off Days. Liberated girls making inhibited small talk from archaic fire escapes, older than Germaine Greer, wrought with iron, as housewives discuss pork chops, and the wind, it howls. It howls around the discotheques. I, standing on the sidewalk with my attaché brimming over with dated tabloids. I eyeball it all. And here, where streetcars used to run, and I walked and walked and walked to get to the podiatrist, I sit and rest. Another snapshot of a separate reality here. Tuesday afternoon. No news is no news. Just quiet on this suburban lane. The highway sounds off in the distance. Children doze sleepy in the afternoon grade school. September, warm still. Time, time, time is here. Babies nap late in this day, while out on the avenues, neons and eons of faces that will resonate and reflect evening song and dance. Just sit waiting with no anticipation. Title of this one is Hip Nose, and I got the idea from the word hypnosis, which is taken from a Greek word, which is hypnos. He goes to bed. No one says a word to him. All is silent. After he lays a minute or two, he goes to sleep. But before he went, what? He thinks about that, and he thinks about this. Before he goes to sleep, before stillness, before nothingness envelops his being, he thinks also of her and of him. His mind gravitates to what was heard and to what was said. contemplation, driving along the avenue, contemplating the meaning and purpose of life, ran a stop sign. A man could get killed that way. Continuum, inspired by picking up the evening paper off the lawn. House. Cat walks from home to lawn and back and forth, to and fro, even though the sign on the gate says, beware. Of the loss of truth, plutonium, and other garbage the newsmen speak. And for next to nothing, it can be piped right into your home and thrown up in your faith. But there is no doomsday or last judgment. There's only today, tomorrow, and the next. I remember reading somewhere that the reward for heroism is the ability to dream. The title of this is Hero Dreams. The children cough in their sleep. Mammoth pipe organ sits in the choir loft, nearly pristine shape, as I gape in insomniac buzz at books on the shelf yet to be read. In the fetal position, corporation executives are turning and squirming in their sleep as the garbage men circle the block, I scribbling calendar calculations with memories of other solitudes, chasing Dharma down the unlit avenues of introspection, 4 o'clock in the morning. And through the hacks and sighs, still, the children sleep. Long strings of angel hair twist around their ears and necks. Cuddly human muffins in toddler blankets of blessed carelessness, removed temporarily from their personal point of blue-eyed view. Events and advents are in the spin of the decade, and man not so kind is up past the cerebrum of the century. It really is time to shit or get off the pot. All you witnesses to the elocution, can you hear me? It's a sticky situation. The nails are rusty, the wood is rotten, but the blood is still fresh on the ground. And the Messiah needs a transfusion. But the bloodmobile's been hijacked by Dracula and the special effects crew. So what can one sole person do? Pass the buck to George or Jimmy? Did you ever see a wound that was closed with red tape? It's ugly. And usually it doesn't even hold up through the first confrontation. So you try to transcend but work with the PTA, the NRA, and the SOBs. But it's never easy. Hero schemes sandwiched between reality and optimism. Hero dreams, sitting at the lunch counter holding the check, and the waitress extends her tattooed hand, palms up, and you know that it's never or it's now. This next poem was written with another couple in mind, but I want to do it for Lynn since we're going to celebrate our anniversary next Saturday. It's called Wedding Poem. Reclaiming romantic notions of ourselves, looking at it all in a different light, looking at it from a new angle. Burnt cork, red wagons, and incense, they're important only to poets and children. What about the rest of us? We reach out for warm flesh, not abstract symbols and such. So we come together. So we love together. Others witness our loving together. And we say, yes. Yes, we love together. And so it is. I'm going to do one more before we get into some music. And this was inspired by the opening of the interchangeable lanes on Highway 70. It was an awful office offertory. It was an awful office offertory after being absent. It was an awful office offertory after being absent with Abe. It was an awful office offertory after being absent from Abe 8 years earlier. Then it was an awful office offertory after being absent from Abe 8 years earlier than Aretha. An awful office offertory after being absent from Abe 8 years earlier than Aretha or Arthur. An awful office offertory after being absent from Abe 8 years earlier than Aretha or Arthur ever ought to be. An awful and abstract office offertory after being absent from Abe 8 years earlier than Aretha or Arthur ever ought to be. And they know it. Hell, they know it. The poet-painter. Poet-painter opens his mouth and lets all the colors spill out. Poet-painter stretches his canvas from here to there and out in the cosmos somewhere. Poet-painter, painter-poet, paints his pictures with colors wet and dry. Poet-painter writes with music in his mind, says what you're seeing, hears what you're feeling. The artist paints his poems with colors that can't be found on anyone's easel. Poet-painter doesn't brush up on what he doesn't know. He just puts it down the way it seems. Galloping across the phrase, gets a goose from the saxophone, lets loose and it's all over the page. Can't find the right word, use the right sound. Can't find the right sound, silence will do. Poet-painter dabs and dabs and dabs at his canvas, stands back, takes a long look, says it feels just right. This one is the title poem from that book that's somewhere in the nirvana of my mind. Coldness, distance, all the lost souls in separate rooms. A table for four with one sitting there. Coney Island cowboys in a masquerade. On the plank, on the escalator, a sense of relief and a sense of direction. In my sleep and in the horn section, a wholesome kind of genuflection. The lazy ladies of Manhattan. The freedom of Steve Allen. The mystery of Dorothy Kilgallen. The secrecy of Frank Sturgis. The sturdy stocks of the Grand Northwest. They're all related. Staring at real pictures of Christ taken in a photo booth. The endless train of horsecock on the conveyor. All the damn funerals we all still have to attend. Whole sacraments of nothingness. But even the people on death row dream. All the pleadings, all the hopes, all the Catholics with no one left to convert. All the visitors with no one left to visit. I've always liked poetry with metaphors and images that I can relate to, like she hugged and kissed me till I felt just like Monty Hall. Electrical symbols and sayings that can be turned off and on. Nothing against Homer, it's just I was plugged in at a young age. If the words get to your brain and you can't understand, you've got to just listen. Poem covering three seasons. All winter spent, sneering and snorting the snow, while the glacier of doom slid closer to the door and eventually into the rooms of the home. When the check came, I was out to lunch. No dues paid, only debts acquired, karmic and otherwise. When finally she did confront me with those eyes of vengeance, I froze, still. Still standing there in that strange, shame, delirium daydream, I did remember other times together, like when the cop caught us in the woods. She said she was doing a layout for National Geographic. I, arrogant with youth, told the cop I was a gynecology student on a field trip. That was years ago. Now nothing was very funny. It was cold. Even in the spring, taken in by the definitiveness of nature, I became the blossoms on the branches that scraped the window. I became the kids playing ball in the street by the sewer. I became springtime flannel against moist flesh of the forearm. For a time, I was out of the cage of self. I became auto horns honking in the Saturday night intersection. I became bulbous sundown air on face and in fine hair of the nostrils. I became orange gravel crunched under black parking lot tires. I became mother and baby in backyard swing passed by impervious afternoon drivers. I became younger and older sister yanking on red licorice on the confectionery sidewalk. All this and more simultaneously. I was taken in by it, the sensation of it, the poetry of it, the sound of the music, the sensation of writing the poetry, the sensation of reading the poem. I was absorbed in it. But in the summer, it all boiled over. After the reception, in anger and frustration, the furniture was smashed. On steaming downtown street corners, I asked my brother to block out the don't walk signs. Saw dazed midnight pilgrims grumbling and stumbling, surrounded by the blaring white tile of the all-night hamburger place. I didn't turn away, I just stared, straight ahead. There's no lantern to light the way in this shaft. All I can tell you, dear, is to steer clear of devious shamans who would ride the tide of your wavy brain, then disappear at the crest. Final short prose thing. In one ear. Again, the days had become short, and the wind and cold gripped the bricks of the city. Inside the busy tavern, there was much conversation, but little conversion. At one table near the center of the crowded barroom, an animated fellaheen spoke with sweeping gestures to a prince seated with him. There's a persistent brutality and insensitivity that abounds in this country. It infects the children of the household in a most insidious way, said the fellaheen. More than the stench of the air, more than any lack of real inspiration, it's this brutality that troubles me. The decorated prince leaned forward and answered, "Then it's not the bite of the wind that brings tears to your eyes." "No, it's more permanent than that," complained the fellaheen. "Well, my reply is the same as when I leapt from your television screen more than a year ago. I have nothing more to add," spoke the prince. At this point, the forlorn fellaheen became indignant. Pounding on the table, he shouted, "You're just like the Ivory King. Your solution is just to smile it all away. But that can't be done. It won't go away." The prince, after listening to this tirade, gathered his wraps in order that he might exit. But before he left the saloon, he slipped into the men's room. When next he appeared, he was in the uniform of a trash collector. As he went out the tavern door towards a garbage truck, the prince turned to his aide. Tossing the keys to him, he said, "Here, you drive. I'll dump." Thank you. Michael.